The concept of investing in wine, Tom, is actually not entirely new to me, because I think Jason asked me a while ago if I wanted a case or two to invest in, and I said, yeah, okay. So I think I've got some stashed away somewhere in the purlieus of your warehouse.
You're trusting Jason's tucked it away responsibly.
It's definitely marked up in your name, not his name.
Adventures in wine.
We'll come on to storage and wine fraud. And he's like,
oh, right, okay. So actually, yes, you are talking to a wine investment virgin. Yeah. I mean, the very idea that, you know, you actually should just buy the stuff and not drink it is anathema to me, but there we go.
I'm David Chandler, and he is Tom Ashworth.
I obviously grew up in the family, but then went to work in the city for 10 years, so that gave me some interest in investment. But in the mid-90s, I started getting interested in wine generally, and Jason and I started building a cellar together, which we've still got the remnants of. We've kind of divided it and sold a bit and enjoyed some of it. So I was kind of investing, although you can build a cellar that you hope to enjoy, and also with an eye to some investment and making money out of it. It used to be, in the wine trade, you'd buy two cases of a wine, and one of them you'd keep to drink, and the other one you'd sell, and the one you sold pay for the one you drank, so you'd end up drinking for free. That was the idea.
Oh, I love that idea. It requires that you know a little bit about what you're buying, I imagine.
Yeah, that's the key.
You put your hand on a bottle of wine there, Tom.
I know. Well, I thought we should pop a cork on an investment-grade fine wine.
Oh, wow.
Even if it is late Monday morning. This is normally what, you know, Monday lunch is all about. It. Yeah, but we'd have people believe. So, as a bit of a way in, what I'll do is decant this bottle, because although it's 2005
right.
Pauillac, Grand Puy Lacoste, it's actually pretty young in its journey as a fine wine. So it will be better for decanting. Two reasons why you would decant a fine wine is, one, if it's young and you want it to breathe and get some oxygen in there. And secondly, if it's very old and it's got a lot of sediment that you don't want to pour into your glass. So this has been upright for a couple of days, shouldn't have too much sediment, and I'm going to decant it here. And while I'm doing that, I will start talking about investing in wine. And why would you want to do that? Why wouldn't you want to just drink it? Well, three reasons why wine is interesting as an investment. Three primary reasons. One is fine wine actually improves with age. Mm-hmm. So fine wine, with age, loses some of its initial fruit characteristics, but it develops much more complex aromas and expression on the palate. So you might get two or three different things going on, where people talk about pencil shaving, cedar, souvoir, more depth of flavour. So that's one reason why you would age wine. The other thing is an investment vehicle is that wine is finite, or a particular vintage is finite. So we've just opened that Grand Puy Lacoste 2005. Well, that's one less bottle of GPL 2005 in the world. So on just a supply demand axis, that means we've just raised the price, David, this morning on Grand Prix 2005, because there's less. And so what you can't do with wine is things like quantitative easing, which you hear a lot about recently, where the Bank of England or Fed just prints money. Well, you can't just print more Petrus 82 or Mouton 90. What there is a diminishing amount in the world. So people who want to drink that are willing to pay more for it, because it's, you know, there's less there. So there's a rarity value. The other interesting element with investing in wine is that if you make profits from investing it, and there's a caveat there, but it's deemed to be a wasting asset, which means that it has a predictable lifespan of less than 50 years. So if you sell your wine and you make some profits on it, it's not subject to capital gains tax.
Okay.
So that's why it's also been an area of interest for investors, because if you sell a second home, you will pay 28% on tax on the profits that you make from that second home sale. if you sell shares, you would also pay 20% as a higher rate taxpayer. So the profits from selling wine are tax-free, unless, the caveat is, unless you were deemed to be doing that as a professional. So if that was your sole trade,
right?
I think that, you know, the revenue might take a view that that was your profession, that was your income. But generally speaking, it's tax-free profits. So those are three of the critical components. Three other really key considerations are, firstly, that the wine market is unregulated, unlike in financial services. So there have been cases of scams, of mispricing of wine, the wine that somebody had sold and taken the profits. I mean, not common, but it is out there. And unlike financial services, where you have a compensation scheme, you have to be regulated, you have to have a banking license. Pretty much anyone could, in theory, set themselves up as a fine wine merchant and offer wine investment. So, and there's been some famous instances. I mean, the most famous was a guy who faked a lot of bottles, an Indonesian guy who popped up in the US in the early 2000s with some amazing rare bottles, Rudy Kunua, and he was selling these bottles for about 6 or 7 years, and then they're finally taken down by the authorities, and he's just finished a 10 stretch for fraud in the US.
So what was he doing? Faking the labels as well?
Labels, corks, glass, and the wine in the bottle. So he was basically really? Had a home factory producing fake old wine that he was then selling at auction.
That sounds like a lot of hard work to me.
Well, yeah, well, there's good proceeds in it if he'd gotten away with it in the end. I'm not sure it's worth 10 years in a US prison, but there was certainly an incentive there. It shows you how much money there can be in rare bottles. And rare bottles will go for sometimes £100,000 a bottle. I mean, really very high prices if they're extremely rare. And obviously, provenance is critical. It's really important that you know where the wine has come from, how it's been stored, and there's trust in that process.
Right.
Which comes back to the fact that you have to deal with people that you're comfortable dealing with, whether that's a merchant, a broker, an auction house, etc. Transaction costs are important to think about. Buying, less of a problem, but when you're selling the wine, you will probably pay about 10 to 15% of the value of the wine, depending on whether you sell it through a broker or an auction house. That spread, that bid offer spread, or how you sell the asset, is quite high. Storage is critical. So if you're going to buy a wine now and then keep it for 10, 20 years, it has to be stored in ideal temperatures, and that is cool, dark cellars that aren't humid and that aren't rumbling, aren't vibrating, not under a railway arch, etc., because that is how wine will age well. And it's not surprising that the two predominant professional storage houses, LCB, London City Bond, and Octavian, are both in former MOD munitions dumps.
Okay.
Several of them in Wiltshire. There's munitions and wine, both like similar storage.
What is it with the vibrations then? What happens?
Well, it just unsettles the wine. Obviously, you've got sediment in the wine.
Okay.
And that will change the character of the wine if that's consistently being moved
around.
All
right, okay, understood. Yeah.
So that's absolutely critical. It's also critical that with your storage, and you pay about anything between about £10 and £15 per case per year for good storage, but you have to do it. And that would also include insurance if something happens to the wine at the replacement value of the wine. So in the unfortunate circumstances that something happened to a case of wine that you were storing, you stored it for 20 years, you would want the current market price of that wine. One of the most expensive bottles of wine ever sold at auction was sold by Christie's. And it was a 1787 Lafitte that had purportedly been owned by Thomas Jefferson. And it was bought by Christopher Forbes at auction for over £100,000. And
wow.
He put it in a display case with light and heat, and the cork dried out and crumbled and fell into the bottle. And both the book and a film were made about it called Billionaire's Vinegar. So there's a cautionary tale. So I'm going to pour this out, this young wine, just so we can let it air a little more and have a sniff and a sip.
So you said this was investment grade wine. What does that mean?
So by that, it's a very small proportion of the wine made. It's even a small proportion of fine wine. Investment grade means, A, it's a fine wine that will improve with age, firstly. Mm-hmm. Secondly, to be investable, it really has to have a secondary market. It has to be tradable. It has to have people out there wanting it. And that's not even the case with all good wine, or even all fine wine. So I would think the actual number of wines that are considered investment grade are less than 1,000. And that would be quite a long tail there. I mean,
oh, really?
So there's it's quite a small proportion of wines that are really actively traded on a daily market. And traditionally, Bordeaux dominated the investment mm-hmm. wine scene. But over the last decade, that Burgundy, increasingly, the Rhone Valley, Super Tuscans from Italy, and some Barolo as well. Some Californian wines like Opus One, Screaming Eagle have always been collectible. And there's definitely a secondary market in those. And Champagne has really come up on the rails in the last 10 years as well. So things like Dom Perignon, Krug, Cristal, other...
Can you keep that for as long?
Yeah, so you can. It's certainly 30 years, good vintage Champagne. White wine, as it ages, takes on colour, and red wine loses colour, funny enough. And so you get lucky. The lighter the red wine, the older you can probably guess it would be if you were blind tasting. But yeah, with vintage Champagne, it takes on a lot of those yeastier characteristics that you get in vintage Champagne anyway, but it makes it a bit nuttier, but kind of honeyed textures mm-hmm. and very enjoyable. If you bought your fine wine, you stored it correctly, how would you go about selling it? Well, there are various options. Auction houses, you've got Christie's, you've got Sotheby's, Bonhams, you've got a couple of specialists like Straker Chadwick or in Abergavenny who have wine sales. Again, you'll pay sellers and buyers for your auction houses. Brokers, there are some specialist brokers. And the UK has a world-class fine wine broking reputation. So mm-hmm. people like Farr and Bordeaux Index and Setfords, they're all buying and selling fine wine for UK customers, but they have big markets in the Far East and the US. So you've also got traditional wine merchants who have broking arms, or they just might buy and sell fine wine as part of their business. So, for example, we at Yacht Brothers will buy fine wine, not just Rhone Valley, but other fine wine for private customers who want us to do that for them. We'll also buy wine for restaurants who want aged, mature wine that they can put directly on their lists, and they don't have either the storage capacity mm-hmm. to have it in the restaurants for 20 years, or they don't want to sell the wine that long. Mm-hmm. A good place to look at information is a wine trading exchange called Livex, and that essentially does what the FTSE 100 does for wine. They'll have a Burgundy index, a Rhone index, but their overall index is the Livex 100. And the constituents of that has changed. So that will be 100 of the most sought after wines. And you can see how that has changed over time. The Livex 100 is up 34% in the last 2 years.
Wow.
The constituent of that in 5 years has changed quite a lot. 5 years ago, that was 50% of that index was made up of Bordeaux mm-hmm. Chateau. 30% was Burgundy. Now you've got these other areas like Italy, like the Rhone, like Champagne coming in. So Bordeaux has diminished slightly in terms of dominating the wine market. Should we try this?
Yeah, why ever not?
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit of smokiness, cedar on the nose, I think.
I was going to say licorice.
Yeah.
Mm. Why, beautiful.
It's still quite young. It's still got a lot of depth, a lot of complexity.
That's still to come. Yeah. I think it's funny. I don't know how I know that, but, you know, you can tell somehow that there's going to be a lot more to it in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
So, Pauillac.
Yes.
That's not an appellation I've ever heard of before.
So, it's a commune in Bordeaux. So it's in the Médoc, which is the left bank of Bordeaux.
Okay.
Cabernet Sauvignon dominated. And it's one of the principal communes of Bordeaux. So you've got three of the five first growths. We'll talk about that in a second. Lafitte, Latour and Mouton Rothschild are all based in Pauillac. So gravelly soils generally.
Okay.
But top of the tree for Bordeaux. But you've got communes that may perhaps most people wouldn't have heard of, like necessarily unless they were into wine, Pauillac and Margaux, Saint-Estèphe in Bordeaux. I mean, the fun thing about investing in wine is a bit like art and music, is that the more you learn about it, the more interesting it is.
Absolutely.
And the more comfortable you feel with making decisions and following your nose and following a trail. If you'd bought Microsoft shares in the late 70s, you'd have been sat on a fortune. If you'd bought Apple shares in 2007, just when the iPhone was coming out, they were $7 a share, and they're now $132 a share. So you could pick and choose things. So it's quite difficult to make these comparisons. But what I like about investing in wine is that it's tended to be a pretty steady journey overall.
Right.
It's returned about 5%. And what's nice about it, it's got a low correlation to mainstream assets. So in an environment we are at the moment, inflation, every time you open a newspaper, it's gone up 1%. whatever, 10% for the year. So people are very much beginning to look at alternative assets to diversify their portfolios. And they're looking at things like commodities to a certain degree, but gold. Last year, people were very interested in cryptocurrency, but that hasn't ended well. And I'm not suggesting for one moment people should rush out and pile everything they have into wine, but I think it definitely has a value as a uncorrelated, steady asset.
So if you're doing it to make a fortune, then there are other things, but it's a less volatile market. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting.
I think that is added value there. That's the important thing. You need to take an interest in the subject, and then it's going to give you returns of all kinds, not just financial.
Yes, I think so. I mean, you could, if you were kind of cool hair loop, you could just look at it as a straightforward investment vehicle.
Say you did want to start investing in wine, what would be a realistic figure to actually invest with? What would you need? What's the minimum?
Yeah, so that's a good, very good question. At Yap Brothers, as I mentioned, the vintage portfolio setup invites customers to discuss what they're looking to get out of investing for wine with us. And we suggest £100 a month investment to start with, so £1,200 a year. And we might buy 2 to 3 cases a year with that. If people want to go for more than that, then we're very happy to help them and that's entirely up to them. But I think, going back to what we said about storage costs and that slightly eroding your investment.
Right.
Obviously, if you buy a case of wine and it's worth, and you buy it for £100 and 10% is your annual storage charge, that's you're going to need that wine to accumulate a lot of value just to keep up with the storage charges.
Yeah.
But if you're buying wine for 500 a case, you're still paying £10
a
case
exactly,
of storage.
Okay.
So the percentage that is covered by storage is a lot less. So I would encourage people to trade up and as much as they can, as much as they're comfortable to. So we probably tend to buy wines when we're buying them in about £50 to £100 a bottle market, but we might buy six packs and 12 packs and some magnums and mix it up a bit. But I think realistically, £1,000 to £2,000 a year is the minimum probably worth doing.
Yeah.
And in terms of your percentage of your assets, your wealth, or your investment generally, I mean, I think I wouldn't push it much beyond 5% of your net wealth, if you like. It's probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so what do Yap Brothers do then? Do you actually then just provide a service where you invest for people? So
correct.
They just dump up the money and then you just find the wines?
Yes, And it's very much based on what they're looking for. So they might say, I want to, you know, I've got lots of water, I'm not so interested in that. What I'd like to do is have a bit more of a cross-section of other wines that you buy from, that you buy on our behalf, or I'd like some white wine or some champagne in there as well. So we'll have that initial consultation, and then we'll, every time we see something that we think fits that that remit, we'll buy it and say, look, we've bought this. Do you like it? Yes, no. We'll stick it in the cellar for you. And every purchase we make, then we just advise the customer what we've done, and they'll get an annual statement showing what they've got building up in their cellar. And obviously these days with the digital world, pretty easy to do.
Yeah, that's quite an attractive proposition, isn't it, really?
More adventures in wine at www.yap.co.uk.
No, this was before we started, yeah, 78, I think. But if you look at some price comparisons, you've got Charve Hermitage 77 at £4.55. the happy days.
It's add a zero to that, no?
Yes, well, even current releases are £180 a bottle.
I mean
82 Charve would be well into four figures, but well over £1,000 a bottle.
Wow.
Clap 77 was £3.85 here. So yeah, they were worth cellaring back in the day. And Trevelon, which we would have shipped the first vintage, I think the year after this trade price list was printed, would be likewise probably about £3 a bottle. So yeah, if you'd had the foresight back in the time machine,
yeah,
where you go
with the price of wine now, just imagine what price it's going to be in 50 years' time.